a Montana Indian Health Service official resigns, citing a dysfunctional system. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
We'll also tell you about a vigil planned in Missoula for a slain German exchange student. And tonight on Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program, News Director Sally Mock talks with Lee Newspaper Capital reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison about congressional campaign messages and contested legislative primary races. The director of the Billings Area Indian Health Service has resigned less than 18 months into the job, saying her efforts to improve health care for Indians were being crippled by a dysfunctional system. The Billings Gazette reports Anna Whiting Sorrell complained about the quality and level of services provided. The Billings Area IHS provides health services to more than 70,000 Native Americans and Alaska Native people in Montana and Wyoming. U.S. Senator John Tester, chairman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, says he is calling for an investigation into the delivery of services at IHS specifically related to the Billings region. Whiting Sorrell came to IHS after 4 years as director of the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services. IHS officials did not immediately respond to an email seeking comment.
And in other news from around the state, a vigil is planned in the Montana city where a 17-year-old German exchange student was gunned down in a homeowner's garage. The gathering for Dear and Dee Dee is at 9 p.m. tonight at the Fort Missoula soccer fields. There will also be benefit soccer game this Sunday at the Sentinel High School soccer fields at 11 a.m. in support of his family. Prosecutors say 29-year-old Marcus Karma killed Dee Dee early Sunday by shooting blindly at an intruder in his garage. Karma's attorney says he plans to plead not guilty to deliberate homicide. A hearing has been set for May 12th, but court officials say it is subject to change. Ribbons in the German national flag colors of black, red, and gold are on display on the mailboxes in the neighborhood where Dee Dee was killed, with the exception of Karma's mailbox. Karma was released on bond Monday. A sign on his door says no solicitors.
A federal judge has ruled against conservationists who sought to force the government to protect a high-elevation pine tree whose nuts are a food source for threatened grizzly bears. The Wild West Institute and Alliance for the Wild Rockies sued after the government designated in 2011 that protections for the whitebark pine tree were warranted but precluded by other priorities. U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen ruled on April 25th that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service designation leaves species such as the pine tree in limbo. But he declined to overturn the government finding, saying it's up to Congress to allocate enough money to pay for protections. Whitebark pine are found in Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, California, Oregon, Washington, and western Canada. Canada listed the tree as endangered in 2010.
The Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children celebrates its 40th anniversary and is marking the occasion with several changes to the food package. Montana WIC Program Public Health Nutritionist Chris Fogelman notes WIC was launched 40 years ago in Montana as a pilot project on the Northern Cheyenne and Fort Peck Indian reservations. The federally funded program has grown to 90 clinics in various Montana communities and all 7 Indian reservations. Fogelman says WIC plays a key role in maintaining the health of an at-risk women and their infants and children.
It provides nutrition education and information, breastfeeding information and education. It provides referrals to other social and health service programs and supplemental foods for the participants.
Fogelman says she believes WIC has and continues to have positive effects on the people it serves.
Within our target, we're looking to improve birth outcomes. I believe we have impacted that. We're also currently looking at reducing childhood obesity, and there are some studies nationwide that show that that has improved among the age that WIC serves. The numbers are quite small in Montana, so getting something that is statistically significant, you know, is a little hard with our numbers. We're also seeing children who have reliable growth. They've gotten referred to and have better immunization rates than other children in the state, even though we don't provide those immunizations, so better health care for that as well, too, and connections to health services.
Montana WIC is announcing several federally mandated changes to the food package offered to clients. Perhaps most noteworthy is that the fruit and vegetable benefit for children will increase from $6 a month to $8 a month.
They have, through various surveys, found that fruit and vegetable intake is lower than the recommended amount. So for providing for increased purchases of those, should increase the fruits and vegetables in a child's diet.
On average, the Montana WIC program serves about 20,000 Montanans annually.
A state judge says a lawsuit over protections for eagles and other birds living adjacent to a wind farm near the Canada border should be heard in Montana. San Diego Gas and Electric has accused the developer of the 126-turbine Rimrock Wind Farm of concealing the risks the project poses to birds. Spain-based wind power developer Nature Enner says SDG&E simply wants out of an unfavorable contract to buy power credits from the project. SDG&E also wants to cancel a pledged $245 million investment. The two sides have filed dueling lawsuits, with SDG&E trying to have the matter heard in California court. Montana District Judge Brenda Gilbert ruled on April 25th that Montana is the proper venue because of Rimrock's economic importance to Glacier and Toole counties.
Authorities say a Brandon man has been arrested and charged with the July 1996 shooting death of a Montana veterinarian. KELO-TV reports 41-year-old Thomas Yarchesky was arrested Wednesday in Sioux Falls. He's being held in Minnehaha County Jail with bond set at $500,000. Murder and other charges were dropped in 1998 against Yarchesky after being accused of killing Brian Rain at Rain's mobile home outside Geraldine, Montana in 1996. Montana investigators at the time vowed to continue searching for evidence linking Yarchesky to the crime after charges against him were dropped. The alleged motive was that Rain was dating Yarchesky's former girlfriend. Yarchesky moved to the Sioux Falls area in the late 1990s.
A venture capitalist whose firm backed startups such as Google, YouTube, and Instagram is donating $2 million to help Montana law enforcement officers catch people who are using the internet to prey on children. The Daily Interlake reports Mike Goguen with Sequoia Capital has committed to giving $2 million to the Montana Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force over the next 5 years to fund three full-time officers for the agency, as well as additional training and technology. Goguen is a part-time Whitefish resident who has donated $11 million to Two Bear Air, a Whitefish-based nonprofit that provides helicopter support for search and rescue teams. He learned about the Internet Crimes Task Force last year when Two Bear Air provided surveillance for a sting operation.
BNSF Railway has settled a lawsuit filed by landowners living near a former railroad tie treatment plant near Summers. BNSF spokesman Matt Jones tells the Flathead Beacon the settlement reached last month calls for the company to buy most of the properties owned by the 17 plaintiffs. Jones says the specific terms of the settlement are confidential. Railroad ties were coated with creosote at the 80-acre site near downtown Summers from 1901 to 1986. The area, owned by Great Northern Railway, was declared a Superfund site in 1984. BNSF now owns the property. The company acknowledges chemicals have seeped into the soil and groundwater. EPA project manager Diana Hammer says the recent findings indicate a large plume of creosote further underground than originally thought. Jones says cleanup will continue at the site.
Cinco de Mayo is Monday, which means most people interested in celebrating the holiday will probably do so this weekend. A press release from the Missoula Police Department notes that from 2011 to 2012, the number of Americans killed in impaired driving crashes on Cinco de Mayo more than doubled. It's with that disturbing stat in mind that Missoula Police will join other law enforcement agencies across the state and nation in deploying extra patrols starting tomorrow and concluding Monday, May 5th. Sergeant Travis Welsh says drunk driving deaths are 100% preventable. Just take a few minutes to make a plan before you start drinking.
You know, the best thing to do is designate a driver for the end of the night, you know, to make sure that you have a way to get home safely. You know, have a plan in place. If you are going to celebrate a little bit and consume alcohol, you know, be prepared to call a cab, have somebody come get you, or have that designated driver to get you home safe. We would encourage everybody to, if they choose so, to celebrate and have a happy and healthy weekend. We just ask that you use care and common sense. If you are going to drink, don't drive.
Welsh says even a couple of beers can impair your ability to safely drive your vehicle.
buzz driving is drunk driving. I think we've all heard that phrase a number of times now, and it is in fact true. Impairment can come at different levels for different people. It's never safe to drive, even after just a couple drinks.
If nothing else, getting pulled over could be an expensive proposition. A DUI could cost you about $10,000, a stint in jail, and loss of your driver's license.
Well, besides having to go through the investigation and potentially being arrested, people also should be aware that it does give your insurance a pretty good hit, and eventually you might see your name in the paper, and that's never fun for anybody.
If you're stone-cold sober and see someone driving erratically, Welsh asks you to please report that to 911. If the driver is impaired, that call could save someone's life.
New Mexico is in line to become the next state to take aim at the use of drones for hunting big game animals. Alaska, Colorado, and Montana already have outlined the use of drones in hunting, but some sportsman groups and animal advocates are pushing to see that regulations are passed in every state to protect the concept of fair chase. They say the art of hunting should be based on physical senses and traditions that have been honed over the generations, not technological advancements such as drones. New Mexico's Game Commission is set to vote this month on a proposal that would make it illegal to use drones to signal an animal's location, harass a game animal, or hunt a protected species observed from a drone within 48 hours.
Welcome to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's Capitol reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Mock.
Well, Chuck, in the House Republican primary, there's been some interesting criticisms on social media of Ryan Zinke, and the criticism is coming from some other Republicans.
That's right, Sally, and they're fairly prominent other Republicans. One is Rick Hill, who was the Republican candidate for governor in 2012 and a former congressman, and the other was Ken Miller, who was a former state senator and former state chair of the party. And they're kind of going on the attack against Zinke, saying he's not really what he seems, and they don't think he's the conservative that he's saying he is, although I think that's at least debatable in some instances. But it is odd to see this kind of attack going on. And Zinke is perceived by many as the front runner in the race. He's certainly raised the most money. But we haven't seen any polls, but I would guess he'd be in the top two if we saw a poll. And so Hill is backing Elsie Arntzen, who's another candidate. And I'm not sure who Ken Miller is backing, but he's definitely kind of leading the attack against Ryan Zinke.
And if you're Ryan Zinke, you're probably a little worried about this because there are five candidates in this primary. And even though he's raising the most money, that's a lot of candidates to split a vote.
It is, and, you know, theoretically you could win with 21% of the vote. And so I'm sure they're a little nervous. He's got a lot of strengths, certainly being a former Navy SEAL, which he talks about in every ad and in every appearance, is, I think, considered an electoral asset by many. And, you know, he's a kind of a Montana success story. Has a lot of qualities, but his record is under attack. And it's interesting because throughout the spring, Democratic blogs have attacked Zinke more than any other Republican candidate. We've sort of assumed from that he's the candidate they would just as soon not have to run against in the fall with their presumed nominee, John Lewis.
Well, you mentioned that he's bringing up his military background in his TV ads, and he has a new TV ad that does just that. Let's listen to that.
My grandmother left home when she was 14, earned her way through college, and became a frontier schoolhouse teacher near Ritchie, Montana. That's America. Her conservative values of self-reliance, sacrifice, and service to others are what inspired me to serve America and Montana as a Navy SEAL.
Ryan Zinke, he's the right conservative for Montana.
I'm Ryan Zinke, and I approve this message.
And the visual in this ad, it starts out with some very quick shots of a lot of medals on somebody's uniform.
Yes, it shows a uniform of both dress blues and also a white uniform with various medals, including the Navy SEAL a pin, and it's hard to tell whether that's Ryan Zinke wearing them or not. And one of the Democratic blogs, Intelligent Discontent, has accused Zinke of using the medal or insignia of the Navy SEALs for political purposes. But it's a pretty good ad. It shows Zinke talking about his grandmother and a picture of the grandmother there, and shows him walking across a ranch wearing a cowboy hat and walking across a scene in western Montana without a cowboy hat. And, you know, he says he's the right kind of conservative for Montana, and true conservative, I think he says as well. And that's the message he's definitely trying to convey to people.
And, of course, never hurts to portray those deep Montana roots.
Yeah, and I think his principal opponent in the primary is Matt Rosendale, who moved to Montana about 10 years ago from Maryland. So it's a nice contrast, done sort of subtly, that he's got deep Montana roots.
And, Mike, Ryan Zinke is not the only candidate playing up his military background, and certainly in the Democratic Senate primary, John Walsh is also emphasizing his long military career, and he also has a new TV ad out, and let's listen to that right now.
We ask so much of our brave men and women when we send them off to combat. In Iraq, I saw the price they pay firsthand. But for many veterans, it's a long and lonely road when they return. That's why one of my very first bills is the SAVE Act, the Suicide Prevention for America's Veterans Act, to finally give the care our heroes need, so they know they're not alone. I'm John Walsh, and I approve this message.
And, Mike, this ad shows Senator Walsh polishing and riding his motorcycle, and this isn't the first time a candidate has had a motorcycle as a prop.
No, it's not. We recall a Republican gubernatorial candidate, Rick Hill, back in 2012, who would hop on his, I presume it was a Harley, maybe not, but it was a big motorcycle, and off he went down the road. And same thing here. I think the notable thing here is that, you know, as you mentioned, he's talking about his military record, and this is really the guts of the Walsh campaign. He's been in the National Guard. He led a combat unit over in Iraq for about a year. He talks about things in terms of his military experience almost all the time. And it's a pretty good ad. It doesn't really tell you what the act is that he's talking about. What it does is it extends the amount of time that veterans can get treatment for certain things when they get home from combat or from serving overseas. And it also doesn't say that, you know, that bill's not going anywhere this year, because this is a political year, and so there's no way Republicans are going to sign on to or help John Walsh accomplish anything. But going back to what we're talking about, his military record, I have to wonder, you know, how effective this is in terms of getting a lot of votes. I mean, certainly there's a lot of support for the military in Montana. But is that something to base your whole campaign on? I mean, there's lots of people for whom the military doesn't really mean that much. But that's what they're doing. They're putting a lot of eggs in this military basket.
And you have to wonder, if you have so many candidates emphasizing that military background, you've got Zinke and Walsh and Corey Stapleton as well and some others, if that doesn't dilute the message a little bit and make them indistinguishable in some ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't really hear anyone you know, counting that argument or saying anything that there's anything wrong with the military. I mean, Steve Daines, the Republican running for the U.S. Senate, he just put out a press release, I think, this week, saying, touting his support for veterans programs. I mean, who doesn't support veterans programs? So I think that's another thing that you kind of touched on, too. You know, how does this really distinguish someone from anybody else?
Well, Mike, you've been out on the road with some of the congressional candidates, I think the Democrats so far, and then you'll be out with the Republicans soon. What are those candidates, when they're out there, what are voters telling them? What are they saying they want them to do?
You'd think that, you know, things like health care will come up. It hasn't come up that much. They've spoken about campaign finance reform and money in politics and how they don't like that. And that's a lot of that's because that's what the Democrats themselves like to talk about. And they talk about how they hope to bring jobs to the state. And they often talk about environmental issues. You know, these are Democrats. They talk about the Keystone Pipeline. People are asking them how they stand on the Keystone Pipeline. You know, the candidates I've been traveling with, actually two of them support it, John Walsh and John Bollinger. Dirk Adams, the other Democrat in that race, is against it. And there's a lot of discussion of that at a Democratic dinner that I went to. So, you know, these are different things for different parties that they talk about. When you go to a Republican gathering, you know, they're more talking about what are we going to do to help coal and oil and gas development. What are we going to do to cut regulations, cut government spending, lower taxes, that sort of thing? You know, the Democratic candidates don't talk about that as much.
And Mike, there are, of course, several contested legislative primary races. And on the Republican side, there is a real philosophical rift evident in some of those races, a rift that's really been building for some years now.
Well, I think it's probably the most interesting story in Montana politics this year. We have almost two dozen contested Republican legislative primaries across the state. There's about seven, eight, nine in the Senate, and the rest are in the House. And what you have is you have the faction of Republicans who are calling themselves the responsible Republicans, who are probably a little more moderate and actually worked with Governor Bullock and the Democrats last session to pass some things. And then we have the other wing of the party, which is the more ideological conservative part of the party, who talks about, you know, slashing government, cutting taxes, much more libertarian view of the world. And, you know, there's each side is organized. They've recruited candidates, and they're going after each other. There's no love lost between these two factions. They do not like each other at all. And it's going to be very interesting to watch these races. They're all across the state. They're in Billings. They're in Western Montana. They're in Helena. They're in Great Falls. It's all over.
It is going to be fascinating to see how those come out and then how those races, whoever the winners are, how they stack up against Democrats in the fall. And Chuck, there's only 1 month really to Election Day, and I assume absentee ballots will be going out soon, so people will actually start voting pretty soon.
Yeah, they go out next week, Sally, and that's why you're starting to see the ads running now, because a good share of Montanans do cast absentee ballots, increasing every year. So I think the candidates figure the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks is when they really got to get their messages out.
Well, we'll reconvene next week and talk about what those messages are. Chuck and Mike, thanks a lot.
All right, see you next week.
You've been listening to Campaign Beat, a weekly political analysis program featuring Lee Newspaper's reporters Chuck Johnson and Mike Dennison, and Montana Public Radio News Director Sally Mauch. We hope you'll join us next week for another discussion of the week's political news.
Now for this weekend's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain and lows in the mid-30s to lower 40s. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers and highs in the upper 50s to mid-60s. Sunday calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon and evening with highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. In central Montana tonight, expect rain through the night with snow after midnight. Lows should be 30 to 40 degrees. Tomorrow, look for rain and snow in the morning, then a chance of rain showers in the afternoon with highs 45 to 55 degrees. On Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms with highs in the 50s. In southwest Montana tonight, look for increasing clouds with isolated rain and lows 35 to 45 degrees. Tomorrow calls for increasing clouds, bringing a chance of rain showers through the day. There's a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs 60 to 70 degrees. On Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and a slight chance of thunderstorms with highs in the 50s. And now for the editorial comments of Dr. Tom Roberts.
The Affordable Care Act is designed to help all Americans purchase health insurance, which is comprehensive and within everyone's budget. The reasons this law is needed should be understood by most of us, but it doesn't hurt to remind ourselves. Healthcare is very expensive these days, especially if something serious happens. Treatment of a premature baby or of some cancers can cost close to $1 million. Nobody can predict when something like this, or even a less expensive $100,000 hip or heart valve replacement, might be needed. People don't have this kind of money sitting around, so unless we have insurance, a serious and unpredictable medical illness can lead to bankruptcy. Sad truth is that because of a lack of affordable health insurance, many people have not been getting needed medical care. Some people are forced to live without adequate treatment, and about 30,000 people a year in the U.S. are estimated to die prematurely. Many uninsured do end up getting treated in hospitals, which means that everyone who has insurance pays for their care through higher premiums. The Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare or the ACA, changes that dynamic. Everyone can now buy health insurance, and the cost is limited so that no person or family pays more than about 9% of their yearly income. That amount may be more than some people have been paying or want to pay, but the reasoning behind this law is basically the same as what every other developed country in the world has already agreed on. In fact, we've already agreed on this approach when we started our own Medicare program. We decided that it wasn't right for the older folks in our society not to get needed medical care. All of us pay to keep Medicare sustainable through taxes during our working careers. Medicare is basically an insurance program to pay health care providers so that when an older person needs medical care, they can afford to get it. All other first world countries in the world have some type of social program to pay for needed medical care, but they don't limit it to the elderly. These countries also recognize, like we do for Medicare, that everyone should pay something towards health insurance. In any one year, most people paying for any insurance won't use it. But unless everyone is contributing something to pay for the high-priced illness, the whole concept of insurance just doesn't work. The real trick, which is approached differently depending on the country, is how to get everyone to pay into the health insurance pool. For the most part, Americans have done this through our work. Instead of higher wages, we get health insurance as a benefit of our employment. Those who are not working in a place that provides health insurance have had few options until now. High deductible plans may have been available to healthy people, but poor people and those with any kind of medical problem were pretty much out of luck. And of course, many young people would just take the gamble and not buy insurance, because chances were good that in any one year, they wouldn't be the ones to need health insurance anyway. Now with the ACA, our approach is different. Everyone is expected to pay something for the health care that we all receive. In any one year, most people will need and use very little. But a small number of people will get sick or injured and use a whole lot of medical care, and the rest of us will pay for it. That's the way insurance works. For those who decided not to participate either through work or by going onto the health care exchange and buying insurance this year, there will be a small tax penalty, but a larger one for the following years. We in Montana and about half of the other states have left out a small but important part of our population. About 50,000 people, or roughly 5% of Montanans, are not making enough money under the current rules to pay insurance on the health care exchange. The original plan of the ACA was that these people would be placed into the Medicaid program. There are a number of ways we in Montana can approach this issue. Our legislature could continue to decide not to accept any federal money ever to pay for these people's care. Or we could follow the lead of Arkansas and use the federal money to put these folks on the private insurance pool. Or we could decide as a state, probably through a referendum, that we are ready to expand the existing Medicaid program to include these people. There are a number of possibilities, but it is up to us as a state to decide. Our country has started on a new and challenging approach to making sure that all Americans can have access to the medical care they need, and that everyone is contributing something to the cost. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Tom Roberts.
Dr. Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.